You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Bonjour, bonjour. The title of this message is The Extermination of Judah, Part 2. Well, ladies and gentlemen, another week that Yahweh has revealed more to me, and I shall reveal it to you. You know, I suggest, and I have suggested this in the past, is that you just shut off everything, shut off the television, shut off the radio, and just relax and think. Don't try too hard. You know, when I received this week's trinkets, that's what happened. I wasn't trying to think about anything too hard. It just all of a sudden dawned on me. And I thanked Yahweh immediately because it's glory to him that he reveals this to his people. Now, I went on Eli's one-to-one show, and the beginning never got recorded, so I'm going to repeat two of the trinkets here. But there's a major trinket. This will be a mini sermon before we get back into Germany Must Perish. I would like to also remind you of the equation: World War I plus World War II equals where we are today. Two of the little trinkets that I have already revealed, but you may have not been listening to that show. The Hegelian dialectic, it is revealed that it was around before Hegel had thought of it or had spoke of it in his writings. And so this will prove to you that it is not a worthy pursuit to even bother with these institutions. They happen to be part of Mystery Babylon, as you've been told. So as we think of the Hegelian dialectic again, in case those that don't know what I'm talking about, you have a thesis that fights against an antithesis, and in the process, there's a synthesis of the two. So, long, long ago, the fight between paganism and Christianity produced the Catholic Church, a Babylonian institution. Think about what I'm saying. It's a hybrid. It's impure. And then I begin to think a little more, and I thought, wow, the Jews for so long have been fighting against Christianity, and this dialectic has morphed or synthed into Judeo-Christianity, the Jewish version of Christianity. You see, you have the Jews who were fighting against Christianity all this time, and in the process, there's a synthesis of the two. And that synthesis produced is Judeo-Christianity, the Jewish version of Christianity. I want to make it very clear to you, and I think I'll have to repeat this several times until you understand what the Jews are doing here. They are guising, they're in the guise of Judaism being a religion. Because calling it a religion is a form of protection. You see, we have the right to religious beliefs. Calling it a religion also makes it tax-free and all that kind of junk. But Judaism is not a religion whatsoever. It's a political movement in the same way as Islam is a political movement, in the guise of a religion. They dress up and look like they're religious people, but they look like Satanists to me, and freaks. And when you really think about Judaism being a religion, it just doesn't fit the picture. It doesn't. They pretend that they ascribe to the Old Testament, but they don't. They don't have anything to do. They can use words from the Bible in their Talmud, and they can say things about people in the Old Testament, but that doesn't make it a religion. It's a cartel. It's a gang of gangsters. It's anything but a religion. And I want you to understand what I'm telling you. Judaism, it doesn't work as a religion. It's not taught as a religion. They have to brainwash their own people from cradle to grave. So once you understand that, you'll understand that you're dealing with, I think Eli says it's a mafia organization. But I had mentioned that I say it's a political movement. They get all involved in politics. They got involved in the religious aspect, which was politics of yesterday when Christ was here. And they got themselves, through Herod, involved in the Pharisaic order and the Sadducee order. And they sat in the highest seats of it, as you well know. See, they weren't really priests. They really had no religion. They were more of scientists or more atheists than anything, because they kept asking Yeshua for a sign. So let's move on to the mini sermon. And I'm telling you right now that I've never heard anybody say this before. And I believe Yahweh gives me original thoughts. And this is glory to him, not to me, of course. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But these are going to reveal some of the most famous words that Yeshua ever spoke. And it's going to reveal to whom he spoke these words. That's the key of it. Okay, so let's move along. The Christ-killing Jews got some of the Israelites to participate in the calling for the murder of Yeshua. And there is proof positive of this, in the book of Acts, starting in chapter 2, and let us see what it says, 2 verse 36. I want you to pay attention to something about this too. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made the same Jesus whom ye have crucified, both Lord and Christ. You know I don't like that word, but I'm just reading what it says there. Notice what he says here. Let all the house of Israel know assuredly. Not let all the world know. So he said, therefore, let all of the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made the same Jesus whom ye have crucified. He's talking to the Israelites here, not the Jews. Both Lord and Christ. Now, when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart. And they said unto Peter and to the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? Then Peter said unto them, repent, and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ, for the remission of sins, and ye shall receive the gift of the Holy Ghost. You see, they were lured into participating the same way the Judeo-Christians are lured into participating in the Jewish version of Christianity. And they are lured into blessing the enemies of Yahweh and Israel. The true Israel, I mean. And just like our military is lured into serving the enemy of Yahweh and Israel. Israel meaning us, not the Jews. And he goes on in verse 39. And remember, he's speaking to the house of Israel. Yes. For the promise is unto you and to your children and to all that are afar off, even as many as the Lord our God shall call. And with many other words did he testify and exhort, saying, save yourselves from this untoward generation. Then they gladly received his word. They that gladly received his word were baptized. And the same day there were added unto them about 300,000 souls. See, not all of Israel listened and were baptized, but you see, some of us will listen, some of us won't. So now let's move. I believe this is Luke. Pilate, therefore, willing to release Jesus, spake again to them. But they cried, saying, crucify him, crucify him. Now see, they cried. Now this was mostly the Jews, but they had got some of the Israelites to participate with them. That's what was just being spoken about in Acts 2. They were pricked in their hearts. They were pierced in their hearts when they realized that they had done this horrible thing, that they had participated in this horrible thing. Not all of Israel did that. Just some of Israel. Just like our Chavez Goy race traders today. Only too much of Israel is participating today. And he said unto them the third time, why? What evil hath he done? I have found no cause of death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go. And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified, and the voices of them and of the chief priests prevailed. Get it right there? The voices of them being the Israelites and the chief priests prevailed. Those were the Jews. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. And he released unto them him that for sedition and murder was cast into prison, whom they had desired. But he delivered Jesus to their will. And as they led him away, they laid hold upon one Simon, a Cyrenian, coming out of the country, and on him they laid the cross, that he might bear it after Jesus. And there followed him a great company of people, and of women, which also bewailed and lamented him. You see, not all of Israel was crying for him to be crucified. You can see that evidence right there in that verse. Okay? Just some of the Israelites participated with the Jews and the Pharisees. Beware if that's you today, because you are no better than a Christ killer if you are blessing the enemies of God. And you will be treated as such. I warn you. I mean that seriously. I warn you. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and your children. See, daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming in which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Then they shall begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, Cover us. For if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? Now, that's a beautiful saying. A beautiful saying right there. What does that mean? For if they shall do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? Well, this was a time when Yeshua was with us. How much greener does it get? And if they do these dastardly evil things in when he was on this earth and present in a flesh body, what will they do when he's not here? You know, when you say, Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bear, that's the way I feel today. I've felt that way for a long time, that who would want to bring a child into this world, this horrible, horrible world, and give them the opportunity to go to hell? So even I have said, Blessed are the barren, and blessed are the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Because I myself don't want a chance to go where the Jew will go. I wasn't asked if I would come here. I was brought here. But I wouldn't want to do that to a child out of sheer mercy. Why, you know what I mean? That's why many of us whites are not having children these days. If you can't trust the world right now, you know, like it's saying here, if they do these things in a green time, what shall be done in the dry? You know, this is David Bowie sang a song, Run for the Shadows of These Golden Years. Well, that was at a time when the golden years were really over with. And what I believe he meant by that, not that I really like Bowie or anything, I just remember that statement. And if you think about it, America had some golden years there. What he's saying is run for the shadows of those golden years. In other words, that's all that's left of the golden years are shadows. So if they do these things in a green tree, what shall be done in the dry? Beautiful saying. And there were also two other malefactors led with him to be put to death. And they, when they were come to the place, which is called Calvary, there they crucified him and the malefactors, one on the right hand and the other on the left. And here is the crux of the revelation, ladies and gentlemen. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. And the people stood beholding, and the rulers also with them derided him, saying, He saved others, let him save himself, if he be Christ, the chosen of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, If thou be the king of the Jews, save thyself. Okay, do you understand? I'll finish this in a second, but do you understand? So I want to make this very clear here now. These are some of the most famous words that Yeshua ever spoke. And it never dawned on me, and I don't think it ever would have. See, I thought everyone was included in this. Then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He's not speaking of the Jews. He's not saying that you should forgive the Jews for what they do. The Jews knew very well what they were doing. He was saying, forgive them, the Israelites that participated with the Jews in this. He was saying this about Pharez, the Romans, who are our kinsmen, who the Apostle Paul was sent to later. That as they mocked him and did these things, this is who he was speaking about. He was not speaking about any forgiveness for Jews. And that is the revelation. I have never heard anybody say anything whatsoever about that. And I thank Yahweh for that, and glory be to you, Yahweh, and thank you for the revelations of what these things mean. And in our day, people would have loved to know these things. The prophets would have loved to know these things. The angels would have loved to know these things. You see, they know not what they do. They were tricked by the devil's children to do these things. So he was speaking to Israel and to their kinsmen. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He wasn't speaking to the Jews. He wasn't speaking to the Father and saying, Father, forgive them, and they're included in this. Oh, no, 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 no. And to me, when I realized this, I was shocked. Because I never thought of something like that before. I just assumed that all were included, whoever participated in his crucifixion. I don't know if that excites you, ladies and gentlemen, but it sure excites me. I love when Yahweh, sometimes when you're feeling a little bit down and you're going through things and things are tough here and there, when I get a revelation from Yahweh like that, it just lifts me completely up. And I had to thank him immediately. And I said, yes, Father, yes. I wasn't even praying. I wasn't even really looking for it. I was just doing what I told you, just thinking, just relaxing and thinking, not trying to think on anything particular, just relaxing. I'm not saying I heard a voice. I'm just saying that immediately I thought of what he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I don't even know why I thought of it. I haven't read it for a while. But it dawned on me right at that moment what that statement really meant. So, that was the third last statement Yeshua made, you know what I mean? He only said a few more things. I believe the last thing he said, I'm talking about, you know, during the crucifixion. Okay, he spoke after the crucifixion. But he said, I suppose let's read it anyway, just for the sake of, it's the good word of Yahweh. And a superscription also was written over him in letters of Greek and Latin and Hebrew. This is the King of the Jews. But that's not what it really said. This is the King of Judea. Or of Judah. And one of the malefactors which were hanged railed on with him, saying, If thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other answered, rebuking him, saying, Dost not thou fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Yeshua, he called him Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto them, Verily, truly, I say unto thee, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. And it was about the sixth hour, and there was a darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. And the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was rent in the midst. And when Jesus had cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And having said thus, he gave up the ghost. Now when the centurion saw what was done, he glorified God, saying, Certainly this was a righteous man. See, it affected them immediately. They might have been mocking, but just to witness this very death was a life-changing experience. And all the people that came together to that sight, beholding the things which were done, smote their breasts and returned. And you can be sure that the Jews didn't smote their breast and weren't upset. And all his acquaintance and the women that followed him from Galilee stood afar off, beholding these things. Very interesting, is it not? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, it's interesting when you see this black-on-white crime and these Judeo-Christians, they'd forgive the devil himself. They don't understand what it really means when Yahweh says, forgive your enemies. Yahweh does not forgive his enemies, and he does not expect you to forgive your enemies, unless they're enemies within your own people, unless they're enemies of your kinsmen, unless they're enemies of the tribes. He does not want you to hold forgiveness for our fellow tribesmen. But as far as our enemies go, that's a whole different ball game altogether. But these people would have their daughter raped in front of them and beaten and bludgeoned and killed, and they'd say, I forgive him. Oh, yes. Well, you've got some severe problems. Wonderful that you can pretend you can do that, but let's get real. Number one, the blacks are not our kinsmen. And number two, they do know what they're doing. So let's move ahead to Germany must perish. Now, we haven't even gotten to the reading of the book yet, and you see, if you remember last week, there was a lot of lies being spoken immediately, and we hadn't even got to the book, and we still haven't got there yet. Let's listen to this stuff. Now, get a hold of this. Daily, the truth is being impressed upon us by observation, and upon others less fortunate by bombs, that the German doctrine of force is not one based upon either political expediency or economic necessity. In other words, they're just bombing people just for fun because they're a warring people. Now, you know that's a lie. The personal war lust of those who lead the German people is but a component part of the war lust which exists as a whole in the German masses. You see these filthy Jews calling others what they are. German leaders are not isolated from the will of the German people, because apart from this will, they could not come into being or exist at all. Their personal inspiration, the motivation, even the acquiescence to their deeds are one and all drawn by German leaders from the very depths of the German national soul. See, they don't understand the Aryan mindset. They don't understand us as a people. They are international, but we have national pride. We take pride in our nations. We're supposed to take pride in our nations. They don't understand us. They never will understand us. They never can understand us, and they never can be us. No matter how much they want to replace us, pretend they are us, color their hair to look like us, shave their noses down to look like us, they never can be us. They're just as much of a wannabe as their father, the devil, who wants to be Yahweh, but he can't be Yahweh. He's only an angel wannabe. He is not a god. Far too often the claim has been made that the present German drive toward world dominion... Now, let's stop right there for a minute. The German drive towards world dominion. Number one, may I remind you that they didn't want to go into the war. If they wanted to go into the war, then you might say they have a drive for world dominion. If they didn't have mercy on the English and let them go, we might say they have a drive for world dominion. But this is not so. But I will tell you one thing. The Jews have a drive towards world dominion because they're pretending they're us. Now, we as a race, the Adamic race, are to take dominion over the other families of this world. That doesn't mean ruling them and beating them and abusing them. We're to be a blessing to them, and we have been. Germany had no world dominion. They wanted to get their lands back that were stolen from them in World War I. And their German people were living in those places that were taken from them, and they were being abused by the countries that took them over. So Hitler sought to help his people. So listen to this again. Far too often, the claim has been made that the present German drive towards world dominion is only a street gangsterism practiced on an organized national scale, deriving principally from the lowest classes, the dregs of Germany. Such a claim is not sustained by facts. For the same lust, the same brute force which the Germans display today under the rule of the so-called low-class Nazis, so-called by the Jews, that is, you see, because there really aren't low-class Germans. They were a high people. They were the cream of the crop of the tribes of Israel. They also displayed in 1914, at a time when the highest classes and the noblest specimens capable of being produced by the German nation, the Junkers, ruled that land, and a vast number of Germany's intellectuals and another German high class sat as members in the German Reichstag. No, the problem of Germanism must not again be passed along to the next generation. The problem of Germanism. The world must never again be stretched and tortured on the German rack. However, it must be stretched and tortured on the Jewish rack. Ours is the problem. Ours the solution. The world has learned with a knowledge born of tragedies too numerous, too horrible to record, that regardless of what leader or class rules Germany, war will be waged against it by that country, because the force which compels it to action is an inseparable part of the mass soul of that nation. True, that soul at one time might have been otherwise fashioned. But that time was the civilizing cycle of 1,000 years ago. Now it's too late. Now the Jew is deeming himself judge, jury, and executioner of the German people. No chance to repent. No other chances. They want to make it our problem. When he says ours is the problem, ours the solution, he's talking about the Jews. But he's trying to imply to you that the problem is all the nations of the world. We have a problem in our world with the Germans, when in reality we have a problem with the Jews. You understand? We know that our men of 1917 did not. They had no precedent on which to base their experience. We have not that excuse today. Their futile sacrifices and their empty efforts must today dictate our own actions and decisions. We are paying today for the lack of experience of the last generation in dealing with the peoples of the German nation. When and if the time comes for us to take similar decision and action, we must not repeat their mistake. The cost is far too great. Who would know better than a Jew? Not alone for us, but for all future generations. See, this is how the brainwash is done. This is absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous, ridiculous. We must, see, they're telling you, this is like a newsman sitting on Fox News, the Jewish talking head, and he's telling you what to believe about the German people. and what we can and what the solution is to the German people. He's telling you what the problems of the Jews are, and he's telling you that Germany is the problem that the Jews have. Now, we happen to know that the Germans, like America, had treated the Jews very well in their nations, let them come right in and have full citizenship, full benefits and everything, full access. The Germans were very gregarious to the Jews, which of course leads them to this horrible point. You cannot be friendly to the Jews. The Jews are the real problem to all the nations of the world, not Germany. The Jews are the warmongers that cause death and destruction in all of the world, not Germany. We must bring ourselves to realize that no leader can govern Germany at all unless, in some manner, he embodies the spirit and expresses the war soul existent in the majority of her peoples. Majority is used advisedly, for in speaking of the masses which compose a nation, it must be impartially conceded that some fraction of the mass must be perforce vary from it. Consequently, no unfair contention is here being made that everyone in Germany is guilty of its heinous offenses against the world. In fact, we shall, in pursuing our point, favor Germany by allowing that as much as 20% of her population is entirely guiltless of complicity in her crimes, as well as being foreign to any share of her war soul. We therefore grant, for argument's sake, that some 15 million Germans are absolutely innocent. But shall Poles, Czechs, Slovaks, Austrians, Norwegians, Dutch, Belgians, Frenchmen, Greeks, Englishmen, Irishmen, Scotsmen, Canadians, Australians, and Americans, for we too many ultimately feel the spike of the German boot? Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're hearing this. They're including themselves in our nations, speaking for our nations. These are three-fifths of a man. These Jews are a sub-race. They're not even equal to us. And yet they're claiming to speak for us and claiming that they are of us. Shall all these peoples, numbering some 300 million of the most civilized, most enlightened on the earth, suffer constantly and face unnatural death every generation so that some small part of Germany's populace may continue to exist? Just put the Jew right in that, because that is exactly what's happening. Listen to this. Let me just put the Jew in that. Shall all these peoples numbering 300 million of the most civilized and most enlightened on earth suffer constantly and face unnatural death every generation so that some small part of Jews' populace may continue to exist? Are those 15 million Germans so valuable, so indispensable to mankind, that 300 million guiltless men, women, and children shall fight a war with Germany every time she so decrees? Put the Jew in there again. So in other words, what he's saying is, listen, there's 300 million of us in the world, and is 15 million Germans that big of a deal if we just kill? So what if 15 million of them aren't responsible? We just need to kill them anyway. It's not a big sacrifice. You understand? But you see, you have to see this for what it really is. Because if I was to write "The Jews Must Perish," everywhere you see Germans in this book, you just change it to Jews. And you know what the oddity would be? I've not done it, but I guarantee you it would fit like a glove. Are those 15 million Germans so valuable? You know, the innocent ones? So indispensable to mankind that 300 million guiltless men and women and children shall fight a war with Germany every time she so decrees? Shall perpetual struggle against the Germans be only the future facing civilized peoples? Why breed children while Germany breeds war? See what I mean? Why breed children while Jews breed war? You see? Who are the warmongers? Who makes the money from the wars? Who sat back and laughed while the Anglo-Saxon race killed each other? Do you remember Truman, who I claim, I believe he's a Jew? He was a Freemason too, so he's, whether he's a Jew or he's a Freemason, he might as well be a Jew. He is a Jew. He said right in the paper, I don't care who wins the war. Just as long as many Germans and Russians, as many die as possible. Who would say that but a Jew? Would somebody in our own Anglo-Saxon race say something like that? Well, yes, if they were Shabbos Goy Jew, they would, yeah. Can you picture yourself saying, oh, I don't care who wins the war between Russia or Germany, just as long as many of them perish or die as possible. Could you see yourself saying that, ladies and gentlemen? Well, that's what Truman said. Shall perpetual struggle against the German be the only future facing civilized people? Let's turn that again to the Jew. Now listen, which sounds right to you? Shall perpetual struggle against the German be the only future facing civilized people? Why breed children while Germany breeds war? In other words, why have children? They're just going to kill your children, right? Now let's say that again now. You ready? Shall perpetual struggle against the Jews be the only future facing civilized peoples? Why breed children while the Jews breed war? Which one makes sense? Are not the Dutch a sober and thrifty people? Are not the French cultured? Are not the Czechs industrious? Are not the Poles deeply attached to land, family, and God? Which we Jews will make sure we destroy all of those peoples, and we will make sure that there's no such thing as a Dutchman, there's no such thing as a French culture, there's no such thing as industrious Czechs, and we will make sure that the Poles will not own their land, they won't have a family, and we will destroy their belief in God. Are not the Scandinavians a decent people? What are the Jews doing to the Scandinavians today? Are not the Greeks brave and fearless? What are they doing to Greece today? Are not the English, Irish, Scotch, and American freedom-loving and progressive people? See, I told you the Adamic race was a progressive people. I told you the blacks are a regressive people. The Indians, I'm not talking about the Indians here, I'm talking about the Indians, they're a regressive people. The Muslims are a regressive people. You can see they haven't progressed at all, can't you? I mean, the proof of the pudding is in the tasting or in the eating. Just use your eyes, use your ears, and use that wonderful, wonderful computer you have inside of your head called your brain. Listen to this Jew again. Are not the Dutch a sober and thrifty people? Are not the French cultured? Look what they're trying to do to France today. There will be no French culture left. Are not the Czechs industrious? Can you say that the blacks are a sober and thrifty people? Can you say that the blacks, I could say they're cultured, all right. Are the blacks industrious? I think you know the answer. Are the blacks deeply attached to the land, family, and God? That's laughable. Are the blacks a decent people? Are they brave and fearless? Are they freedom-loving and a progressive people? No, 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 no. Nope. And in very simple arithmetic, are not these 300 million more than the 15 million Germans? In other words, we'd just wipe out all of Germany. Yes, there's some innocent people there that might get hit through the thing, but aren't we more important? Aren't the rest of us more important than those innocent 15 million Germans, the 20% of the Germans? So just kill them all off. Don't worry about it. It's like, you know, extra insurance to kill them all. Hmm? And then I may remind you that the promise of this Jew is that there will be peace in the world. If we would just destroy the Germans, if we could just do that, we will have peace in the world. Now, do you believe that, ladies and gentlemen? Do you really believe that? Because I'm going to tell you something. They destroyed the Germans, and they are destroying them today. Is there any peace in the world? And now they claim they want to destroy the white race. Being white has to go now. And then we can have peace. See? See, when all the world is a brown and black people, and there's no more white people around, then we can have peace. But before it was, well, if we can just get rid of these Germans, just wipe them completely off the earth, just trust us in this, you know, trust us Jews in this, that if we can just kill these, all these Germans off, there'll be peace in the world. I mean, I know I believe it, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know about you. However, with all the killing that they did of the Germans, whether it be in Russia, whether it be in America, whether it be in Germany, whether it be in South Africa, the world is not any more peaceful with all those Germans dead. And I haven't seen any Germans waging any war recently. Have you? All I see is Jews waging war. That's all I see. How about you? What do you see? World War One plus World War Two equals where we are today. Now, the Jews are bringing all these immigrants into our land. Not just the Germans, Now, if they were just bringing in into the German land, you might say, well, okay, maybe, of course I wouldn't, but you may. But now they want to destroy all white tea. Whitey's got to go. It's not good to be white. You see, these poor fools don't realize that Yahweh put us here to tend the garden and that we are the only ones capable. The Jews actually are so mentally ill that they think they're capable of taking care of this garden. But they've done nothing but kick the plants down, destroy the land, destroy the water, destroy the spirit, destroy the animals, destroy the culture, destroy everything that's possible that you could possibly destroy. They are not capable. They are a sub-race. I don't care how much money they have. I don't care if you dress them up in a suit and they smile at you 24 hours a day and you say, oh, this can't be true. These Jews are such nice people. Don't you understand the game? It's the same thing they teach the homosexuals. They say you've got to be the nicest people in the world. If you're the nicest person in the world as a homosexual, then they won't be able to speak anything bad other than you're homosexual. And they'll begin to say, oh, these are the nicest people in the world. I don't understand why you have problems with them. Just let everybody do what they want to do. It's okay. We have human rights. Just tell Yahweh that we have human rights. You can declare that to him and tell him that we don't care what he wants, that these are nice people, even though he said that these are evil people and you should cull them from your land. Don't, you know, they're nice people. Just like the Jews. They're always smiling. I've known Jews in my life. I hear this. You know, I've known Jews in my life. The nicest people in the world. I've had no problems with them. Brother, we got to figure out how the game's being played. I told you many, many times already that it's called smile to win. You have to, who other than the Jews are the best actors in the world? Can they not act in their daily lives? Did you not hear what that guy said on Pastor Dan's show? That the Jews have two faces? And he found that out when he went over to Israel? That they, just like they have one Talmud for you to read, and then they have the real one that they don't want you to know about that they have. There are two-faced people. One face for the act and one face for the reality. The sooner you realize that smiling is something they do to win, and they teach all the politicians to do it too. How can you fault somebody with a smile? When you see a smile, it's a subliminal thing to you that it's a good feeling. So if you show somebody who's smiling in a picture continually, that's supposed to give you a good feeling inside, because you know that when you smile, it's because you had a good feeling. Here it is again. They're working on your feelings. They're using your feelings to brainwash you, to use you, to teach you things that aren't true. They are actors and chameleons, and they, of course, will act like they're the nicest people in the world. Don't you understand how the game is played? You've got a whole truth movement now of truth-speaking Jews. They just came out of the woodwork, and they're all truth-tellers. They don't agree with Israel. As a matter of fact, Donald Trump all of a sudden had these Jews show up out of nowhere, and they said, we're the real Jews, and we don't agree with Israel. Now, I heard Michael Wiener say the same thing, yet he loves his Holocaust, but he doesn't agree what they're doing over there in the settlements of Israel. Yeah. And then you have the Orthodox rabbis. Oh, they don't agree what's going on over there in Israel, and they got their little signs up. You see, good Jew, bad Jew, just in case you find out. Good Jew, bad Jew, because we must, as a people, say the Jews, show ourselves as redeemable. Show a good side of our people. So while Netanyahu and pigs like him, like the pig in Germany, like the pig in England, like the pig here in America, they can show their dastardly lying selves. But on the other side of the coin, there's the good Jew, the redeemable Jew. I'm sorry, but it doesn't add up. This time, one and one does not make two. Here we go now. If democracy, as Americans know it, is a majority rule in a national sense, it must be so in an international sense. Yes, the Jew. See, democracy, there's your first problem. When did it become a democracy? This is a republic. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, under God, with liberty, under God. Okay? When did it become a democracy? And why did our founding fathers warn us that democracy is the vilest form of government? Why did James Madison say that? Because they rely on the fact that you forgot what the founding fathers said and that you don't know the difference between a democracy or a republic. Democracy is the very thing that has led us into slavery in all of our nations. Just remember, you can certainly see by looking at the word democracy that the first four letters are D-E-M-O. All you have to add is an N. It could be called democracy. You know, like their nuclear power plant that's in Israel, it's called Dimona. D-E-M-O-N-A, I believe. Unless it's D-I-M. They just changed it. But that's how the Jews do that anyway. They change the name. They'll change a letter in something just to hide the invisible, and right in front of your eyes, right in plain sight. Dimona. It probably is D-I-M. I haven't checked it recently. However, it still means demon to me, because these are the children, the literal offspring of the devil. The greatest good of the greatest number is democracy's rule of thumb. To fight for world democracy is to secure the rights of the majority of democratic peoples against the incursions made upon them by any autocratic minority. Who is the true minority there? The sub-race known as the Jews. When did they become the greatest amount of peoples? If this is not so, why conscript a vast army for democracy's defense? Why conscript a vast army to force democracy on the whole world. Force it. Did you have to force a republic upon the American people in its infancy? No, you didn't have to force it. If something's good, you shouldn't have to force it down somebody's throat. Why would we force democracy upon Iraq if they don't want it? Why would we force it on any country that does not want it? And there must be a reason why they don't want it. You see, the reason why he's saying, if democracy as Americans know it is a majority rule in a nation, in a national sense. See, he wants to curb this and say, okay, so now that all the people are for homosexuality in America, which we're not, or if all the people are for democracy in America now, because we brought in all sorts of illegal aliens and people to suck off the system, now they are the majority, you understand? Then it must be so in an international sense as well. It must be. I mean, you know, there's no proof that it is, but it must be. So once of all we believe and we get enough of the nations over 50% to believe that democracy and to receive democracy, then they have to succumb to it. You understand? And then we will just force it down their throats. We'll kill them to make sure they have a democracy. We will absolutely murder them, bomb them. We will torture them. We'll make sure they want their democracy. And we'll make sure they have a central bank as well to control them through this democracy. Because we're spreading democracy throughout the world, not me. The Jews and our military, our Shabbos Goy traitor mercenary military. In 1917, American soldiers, as those of every other major nation, were forced to murder by the millions. What for? Suppose we are forced again to kill. For wars are won only by such killing, not by dying. Again, what for? Another sellout? Is selling out our soldiers to become a national habit? For quite patently, to fight once more in democratic defense against Germany, with any goal in view save that country's extinction, constitutes, even though it loses the war, a German victory. To fight, to win, and not this time to end Germanism forever by exterminating completely those people who spread its doctrine, die to herald the outbreak of another German war within a generation. Just put the Jew in all those places, and it fits. Do you understand that? So it's all right, you know, it's all right for us to force and kill everybody, but it's not all right for the Germans to do that. And the Germans didn't do that in the first place. The Germans didn't force other nations to become German. The Germans didn't force National Socialism on anybody else. But the Jews do force democracy. Let us then beware, for it is not illogical to assume that someday the soldier, if constantly marshaled and regimented against his will, may emerge from underneath the time-worn cloak of duty and come, like labor, capital, and civilian, to demand his rights. It must not be unreasonable to conjecture that the soldier must have rights too. Yeah, right. As well as duties. Certainly, a man forced against his instinct to kill has rights. Perhaps not the rights of wages and hours, nor the rights of profits, nor the right of an untrammeled speech against his superiors. Untrammeled. I've never heard that word before. Which, in a military sense, spells catastrophe. No, none of these, just a few simple rights, three of which would appear in his contestable duty to demand. So he's now going to define the rights of a soldier in our country, you see. The Jew is going to do this. The Jew who knows nothing about being a soldier, who has the worst military in the whole world, the Jews, he's going to tell you what the rights of a soldier are. He's going to define the rights. You see, the Jews will do this for you. Okay, three of which would appear his incontestable duty to demand. One, that he be adequately supplied with the proper arms in sufficient quantities so that there be a maximum of speed attached to his killing. Secondly, that he be not betrayed by fifth columnists who must be in wartime, be summarily dispatched by imprisonment or execution. Now let's just stop with the proper arms in sufficient quantities. Do you remember, I believe it was Vietnam, soldiers writing home saying they didn't have the proper things to wage war? And they were trying to buy them back at home and have them shipped to them? Like Eli said, when he went to war, he was fighting a war against communism. And he came home and he found out all his college professors were communists, teaching communism in the schools. So here's the second rule the Jew says. Secondly, that the soldier be not betrayed by fifth columnists, who must, in wartime, be summarily dispatched by imprisonment or execution. And lastly, of the primest importance, that he receive a definite avowal by his government, guaranteeing him once and for all time that this whole ghastly, horrible business of killing the Germans is at an end, that his son may know peace without having to kill for it. Was there peace after World War II, ladies and gentlemen? Was that an end to wars? I tell you, it's incredible. Let me have a sip of coffee here. If such a guarantee be not vouchsafed him before his struggle, or be not upheld after his struggle, as it was not the last time, though the generals knew among them our own Pesching, that Germany at that time should have been unalterably snuffed out, our generals believed that Germany, that they were fighting on the wrong side of the war. Granting labor has the right to strike when its rights are violated. Granting that capital withhold itself from circulation when it feels its usage unprofitable. Granting that civilian feels tyrannized when his civil liberties are jeopardized. Civil liberties? Do those words go together? Ladies and gentlemen, do those words go together? Civil liberties? Liberties are liberties. What course may the soldier not take once he realized that he has been cheated, once too often, out of that for which he killed? Well, let's look at our soldiers today. They come back wounded. They haven't received the money that they were promised. They're not receiving the treatment for their wounds that they were promised. And then they are deemed as an enemy to the country and have their arms, rights to arms, stripped from them, which is illegal in the first place. How do you think it feels to be a Chavez Goy race traitor, mercenary military man with the United States who forces democracy and kills innocent people and children and women to force democracy down on other nations for the Jew? How does it feel to be one of those today? It doesn't feel too good, I bet. When the day of reckoning with Germany comes, as come it will, there will be only one obvious answer. No statesman or politician or leader responsible for post-war settlements will have the right to indulge in the personal luxury of false sentiment and specious sanctimony and declare that Germany, misled by her leaders, shall deserve the right of resurrection. He will not be permitted this time to forget so easily the bomb-blasted, earth-entombed millions of women and children who lived through a hell on earth, the bullet-ridden, tank-crushed bodies of soldiers, the many countries whose energies were sapped and resources drained. Hello! And most of all, he will not be permitted to disregard the unselfish sacrifices made by the common people. Not us Jews, we're not common people, you see. We're above all of you. So that the beast that is Germany shall never roam on the earth again. It is a definite obligation which the world owes to those who struggled and died against Germany yesterday. And, should say Germany yesterday. Well, against the German yesterday. And to those who are fighting him again today, as it is the bounden duty of the present generation, to those yet unborn, to make certain that the vicious fangs of the German serpent, hello, let's turn that around, hold on a moment, shall never strike again. And since the venom of those fangs derives its fatal poison not from within the body, but from the war soul of the German, nothing else would assure humanity safety and security but that the war soul be forever expunged and the diseased carcass which harbors it forever removed from the world. There is no longer any alternative. Now let's stop right there. Let's put the Jew in place of this. This is exactly what I'm talking about. All I'd have to do is just put the Jew in place of Germany in this whole book. Just replace it, and there you have the Jews must perish. Are you ready? Listen to this again now. It is a definite obligation which the world owes to those who struggled and died against the Jews yesterday, and to those who are fighting him again today. And it is bounden duty of the present generation to those yet unborn to make certain that the vicious fangs of the Jewish serpent shall never strike again. And since the venom of those fangs derives its fatal poison not from within the body, but from the war soul of the Jew, nothing else would assure humanity safety and security but that the war soul be ever, or the Jew be ever expunged, and the diseased carcass which harbors it forever removed from the world. There is no longer any alternative. And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, that really is the truth. When you put the Jew in the place of that, there really is no other alternative. You can see that is clear. There was no alternative when Yahweh told Israel that many years ago to kill these people. We would not be living this hell that we are living in today had we obeyed Yahweh yesterday, had our forefathers. I'm not talking about of America now. I'm talking about our forefathers of Israel, namely Saul. Et al. John Hyrcanus. And many of the kings. They were told to expunge these people, to kill these people, to exterminate them. And instead, they took them, let them live with them, and charged them a tax, so to speak. A tribute. So they were able to collect some money from these Jews, but they allowed them to live with them. They were known as Edomites, they were known as Canaanites, etc. They disobeyed, willfully disobeyed Yahweh, which causes the posterity of the true Israelites, which we are the posterity of the man Israel who had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel. We are the posterity. Since they did not obey Yahweh back then, we are now living in the hell that Yahweh tried to prevent for us. And still today, the posterity is blessing this enemy. Yahweh forbids it. How would you like it if you and I were friends and you had a real enemy that you really disliked vehemently, and I kept chumming up with your enemy and I gave him money and I told him, blessing to you, brother? What do you think of an effect would that have upon you? What if I told you, your enemy's not so bad? Look, he smiles all the time. I know some of his own people tell the truth, too. Yeah. Look at the smile. How would you feel about that? Well, that's what you are doing to Yahweh, and that's what you are doing to your brothers, which we are your brothers. Although that separation is separating more and more day by day. You are blessing the Jews. You are blessing God's enemies. Period. If you are blessing the Jews, you are blessing my enemy. Period. They know that they are our enemies. It's just that you, dear listener, you, dear Judeo-Christian, don't understand that. I'm not mad at you because you've been hornswoggled. I know that this filthy creature is very deceptive. I once was like you. So I don't really look down upon you. I have hope for you. I pray for you. But you're not making it easy. You're only making it easy for Yahweh's enemies. And you're certainly not making that easy on yourself. You just think you're doing the right thing, but you're not doing the right thing. I promise you this. I promise you this. So he says there is no longer any alternative. Germany must perish. This war, with its harrowing miseries, its indescribable German devastations, devastations, nothing like the Morgenthau plan, or what the terrible Swedish Jew did. These are all German devastations, see? This war, with its harrowing miseries, as if the Jew knew what misery was. Its indescribable German devastations. Its unutterable German atrocities. Is born of the war soul of those barbarians of whom Machiavelli, writing over 400 years ago, observed. Oh, really? German towns are at little or no expense in anything, but in laying up military stores and making good their fortifications. On holidays, instead of other diversion, the Germans are taught the use of weapons. That's terrible, isn't it? Yahweh says we ought to be warriors, and we are to. No weapons. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue this next week. You see that these Jews have just got the wrong name in this book. All they really have to do is switch the names around. Switch Jews for Germans. And then the book would be absolutely correct. Is that not amazing? Do you know of another book that would work this well? Well, they've done that in the Bible as well. They've switched themselves in for the true Israelites, whom we are. Is it not interesting? They can switch it around, but I don't think they'd like it if I wrote a book using that book called The Jews Must Perish. I like that. Ladies and gentlemen, WAKEUP. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.